All right. Well, good afternoon. I'm Patty McGlinchey. We are going to start today's class of the section of Neuro looking at an introductory class on the nervous system. So the nice thing about this class is by the time I'm done teaching all of it, this will seem incredibly easy because I'm going to repeat what I'm saying during this first hour over and over the next 4 days. And you are tested on this on Friday. So this is not the type of class where you can take in the information and then go home and learn it. You're to learn it here today while I'm teaching. So if you have questions, make sure you ask while I'm teaching it. So as you see here, I'm a self-professed lover of Neuro. What that means is I really, really love this stuff. Ask the folks that were here before. I love anatomy, and for some reason, me and the brain have a thing going on. I just love studying it, reading about it, and I might get a little too excited about it. You may have to buffer me now and then if I get off tangents, but you're getting someone up here who's teaching what they love. You have all your objectives in the handout, and the organization of the handout follows the learning steps, so that should help you as you study. I'm going to just skip right through to the actual information. So first of all, definition, the nervous system, what is it? Simply put, and it's a very complex thing, but simply put, it's complex and highly organized network of billions of neurons and supporting neuroglia cells. So we're talking just about two types of cells, neurons and neuroglia, coming together to do all the things that are done with the nervous system. And you can go ahead and just blow your mind right now. Think of all the things the nervous system does. Your memories, your senses, moving muscles. It's really amazing. So we're going to get into as much of it as we can over the next, I think, 10 hours or so. Organized-wise, we're going to just kind of break it down with this first class and see how it's all organized, because it's highly organized. That's one of the key things I want you to know. The nervous system is organized. It's not helter-skelter. But if you look at the organization of it, you're going to see the central nervous system and the peripheral nervous system. And this is how I break out the classes, too. We're going to have some classes that highlight just the central and some that highlight just the peripheral. The central nervous system is made up of the brain and the spinal cord. It's easy to remember, though, the central nervous system because they lie center in the body, brain and spinal cord. The peripheral nervous system are all those nerves that run from the brain and spinal cord out to the periphery of your body. That's where the word peripheral comes from. They run to the periphery, or they run from the periphery to the spinal cord and brain. So those two main headings, central and peripheral, and then if you break it down further, central is made up of what two structures? And the peripheral nervous system is made up of the peripheral nerves. Okay, we're doing pretty good. So function-wise, now that was looking structurally. Now functionally, what does the nervous system do? You have a sensory function, an integrative function, and a motor function. And let me back up. Okay, so sensory-wise, the nervous system takes all the stimulus on the external environment. So that would be right now you're feeling the breeze from the fan, you're feeling the room temperature, you're feeling the pressure of your seat, the scratchiness of your clothes. Your nervous system's bringing in all of that external stimuli, plus it's bringing in all the internal stimuli. What's going on in your stomach? What's going on in your heart? All that internal feedback that your body needs. So sensory is from external and internal, bringing that information in to the brain and the spinal cord. So what brings it to the brain and spinal cord? What part of the nervous system? Peripheral. So peripheral's bringing it in to the brain and spinal cord. Then you have the integrative function. And this function is the one that takes all that information and processes it. So we're talking about all your sensory information. It puts all that information together, makes sense of it, it analyzes it, it stores it, which we'll be talking about the memory. And how memories get stored is still an unknown fact. Neuroscientists are still working on that, how memory is stored. So that's part of the function of the nervous system to storing it. And then determining the responses that should occur, if any. That's all part of the integrative part of the nervous system. And then you have the motor function. And this makes total sense. Motor function is what you do. It's controlling the muscles and the glands to have them to react in the way that they need to. So we're talking about the muscles in your arms and legs, as well as the muscle in your heart, and those that function your lungs and all the glands in your digestive system. So any questions so far? Okay, now we're going to get a little bit, we're going to kind of repeat a little bit, but go deeper and deeper. So looking at the central nervous system specifically, what two structures? Brain and spinal cord. And yes, there will be questions as simple as that on the test. Okay? Don't think this neuro test is ridiculously hard. All right? It's fun hard. Yeah. Okay, so the central nervous system, this is the control center for the entire nervous system. Brain and spinal cord. Some people think it's just the brain that controls, but the spinal cord controls as well. So your central nervous system, function-wise, is the control center for the nervous system. Structurally, we already talked about what it's made up of. Brain and spinal cord. How about the peripheral nervous system? What is the job of that? The function of that one is to connect the receptors in your body. So we're talking about skin receptors that pick up touch and temperature and pain, and the receptors within your stomach and your guts and your heart, all those receptors. So it connects all those receptors and connects all the muscles and the glands within your body to the central nervous system, which is made up of the brain and spine. Which is made up of the? Good. Which brings me to a good point. One of the ways that you learn, and that's another, that goes along with my brain fascination, is learning. One of the ways you learn is to actually say it. So those of you that like to be quiet studiers, you read your book and you read your book and you read it over and over again, well, that might work. But what also helps is when you say it out loud. So quizzing each other, repeating things, when I tell you to say something, to actually say it. Some of you don't like to do that. You like to be quiet in your seat. Say it. It all helps you learn. And later this afternoon, we're going to do something else, which is manipulating objects, which will help you learn, too. Some people know what I'm talking about. Oh, we got lots of fun stored up for you this afternoon. All right, so getting back to the peripheral nervous system, the function is to connect. Connect receptors, muscles, and glands to the central nervous system. What is it made up of? You already know peripheral nerves, but let's get a little bit more detailed now. There's the cranial nerves, and then there's spinal nerves. Where do you think the cranial nerves come off of? Oh, you see? You guys are all neuroscientists. You don't even need me here. Cranial nerves come off the brain. How many pairs are there? 12 pairs. So you have 12 pairs coming off your brain. The spinal nerves, what do they come off of? And there are 31 pairs coming off left and right. They're symmetrical. That's the other nice thing about the nervous system. It's pretty symmetrical for the most part, except for up in the brain. Now let's divide those down even further, because it's always good fun in anatomy to be as detailed as you possibly can. And you can divide them down more into afferent and efferent. One letter makes a big difference, whether it's A or E, efferent. If it's afferent, we're talking about the nerves that provide sensory input to the brain and spinal cord. So when you guys think of A now, I want you to think of sensory, afferent. If I talk about an afferent nerve, I'm talking about a sensory nerve. So therefore, if I'm talking about an efferent nerve, what do you think I'm going to talk about? Motor. So the sensory, the afferent, brings the information in to the brain and spinal cord, and the efferent takes the information from the brain and spinal cord out. And what is it going to take it to? Muscles and? Glands is what I'm looking for. Glands. You see, muscles and glands are the two structures in your body that can contract, that can react to the peripheral nervous system. So that's specifically what they're going to. They might be going to the stomach, but what they're going to in the stomach are the muscles of the stomach and the glands of the stomach, specifically. So that's your efferent system, your motor, afferent, sensory. If those are two new words for you, you got to highlight that, because that's one of those things that kind of trips you up. If you don't get that on the first hour, the next hour when I start talking about afferent, if you can't remember what it is, it's going to delay your learning. So get the highlighter on that one. All right, let's break it down even more. More. Now we're going to just specifically look at those efferents. And the efferent are what? You all got that down? Because I only heard about half of you. The efferent are what? Motor. Okay. So if we look at just the efferent nerves, we can break them into two different systems. Those that are somatic and those that are autonomic. And I'm throwing some new words at some of you. If you haven't had this biology background, this might all be new, but it's something you can do. Don't think of this as an obstacle. If it's somatic, another word for that would be voluntary, meaning it's motor that goes to muscles that you can voluntarily move. An example would be biceps brachii. I can voluntarily contract that muscle. Can I voluntarily contract my heart muscle? No. All right, so that would be on the other side of this chart, which would be autonomic. The autonomic efferents are those that go to involuntary muscles. Your heart muscles is a good example. The smooth muscles of your digestive system is another good example of that. And the glands throughout the body. And we can break that down even more, and so we shall. We're going to take the autonomic nervous system, which is the efferents, the motor, and we're going to break it down even more into those that are sympathetic and those that are parasympathetic. Now, this is the part of the class that depresses me because I don't get to teach too much about this, and it's so fascinating. So for those of you that want to do extracurricular studying when you don't have enough to do at night, this is a great area to do your own individual research. It used to be in the program, but 17 weeks is a short time, and we can't teach you everything. And in physical therapy, we really don't use a lot of parasympathetic and sympathetic type things. So this is all you're going to get on it, is what I talk about right here. The sympathetic division of the autonomic efferents is responsible for energy expending things, which is called catabolic. It means they expend energy. So think of things that are involuntary that expend energy. What expends energy? I know I have some examples in your, not much examples in your handout. Flight or fight is kind of probably what you heard if you've had other bio courses. Okay, when you think of sympathetic, you think of flight or fight. What does your body do in times of stress? How about, let's look at the heart. Does the heart rate goes up? How about your breathing rate? Speeds up. Okay, that's sympathetic responses there. That's the sympathetic system working. But in doing that, it's expending energy. Okay, your body's giving off, or using up, I should say. Your body uses up a lot of energy to respond to that flight or fight, that stressful situation. You guys probably went through that a little bit this weekend, or at least this morning pre-test. Okay? You probably, if you took your heart rate, it was probably a little bit higher than what it should be for someone just sitting in a chair. You were expending energy via the sympathetic responses. The parasympathetic is the other side. This is the side that builds up energy into your body. Building up energy would be digesting food. By digesting food, you're supplying the body with more energy through that food particle digestion. So the way I like to think about it, the sympathetic responds to stress. It does all those things that your body would do to respond to stress. And then when you're in a state of non-stress, the parasympathetic restores the energy levels so that you're ready for the next stressful situation. So they work in balance. While you're responding to stress, your parasympathetic turns off, your sympathetic's on. And then when you're in a state of relaxation, no stress, then the parasympathetic's working and the sympathetic's not. So they balance each other out. One's on, one's off all the time. And if you're going to categorize the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, would you put them under somatic or autonomic? Autonomic. Great. Which brings us to the next wonderful slide, if I can get to it. Let me go on a little bit more here. Right here, the big chart. Now, I believe you have this somewhere in your handout. First page. Yeah, I put that on the first page. This breaks down everything I just talked about. You have the two major divisions, central and peripheral nervous system, and they're abbreviated CNS and PNS, and you'll see that a lot. Looking just under the central nervous system, we didn't talk a whole lot under that one. We just broke it down structurally into the brain and spinal cord. Functionally wise, how could you characterize that? With two words, both beginning with C. It is the control center. Okay? So central nervous system, control center, brain and spinal cord. Going to the peripheral nervous system side, we broke it down to efferent and afferent. Efferent motor, afferent sensory. We didn't break down the sensory anymore. And that has nothing to do with me and my beliefs. It's how anatomy does things. There are sensory neurons that come from the heart, which is an involuntary structure, but those sensory afferent neurons are not termed autonomic. All afferents are just called afferent. They don't break it down from there. So that's where that one stops. But if you go on the efferent side, motor, that's where you break it down to somatic, which is voluntary, autonomic, which is involuntary, and then autonomic we break down again to sympathetic and parasympathetic. Sound good? You loving it? Just say yes. Okay, I just want to go back and make sure I didn't miss something here. Why doesn't the afferent, that's what I was just saying. They don't break down the afferent system into autonomic and somatic. Just the efferent. And that's the way the anatomists do it, and that's the way we'll do it too. All right, so how many different types of cells make up the nervous system? Two. And these are the two right there, neurons and neuroglia. Do you like that word, neuroglia? Yeah, that's a fun one, huh? All right, neuroglia. You probably didn't hear about that. You probably just heard about the neurons. And the neurons are definitely the star of the show, but like any show, there's got to be background people. And that's your neuroglia. So let's get into them and look at the different things going on with these two types of cells. But I'm going to tell you, our next class is titled The Neuron. 2 hours. So we're not going to do too much in this class about the neuron except for introduction. We're going to talk about the neuroglia a little bit more, and this is the only class you're going to hear about the neuroglia. So of this handout, everything else you've had in it is going to be pretty much repeated except for sympathetic and parasympathetic and what I tell you about the neuroglia. That's the only thing that stands alone in this handout. So what can I say about a neuron without giving away too much of my next class? Definition-wise, it's a nerve cell. So it's a nerve cell, neuron, those words are interchangeable. And I might go back and forth with that too. So whenever I say a nerve cell, I mean a neuron. And if I say a neuron, I mean a nerve cell. It's one individual cell. And you had your class on cells, so you know it has a cell membrane. What else might it have? Nucleus. What else? Receptor sites. Oh, you're way ahead of us. You're way ahead of us. I'm looking for organelles. Remember all those guys? Yep, all those organelles. Okay, so this neuron, this nerve cell, is a specialized cell. It's a very special cell. Okay, very special cell. And it does consist of having a cell body, which is where most of those organelles lie. And then it has some specialized parts to it, which is your axon and your dendrite. I'm going to talk more about them next class. The function of a neuron or nerve cell is varied depending on if it's an afferent neuron or an efferent neuron. But mainly what you're looking at is it has special functions like sensing, thinking, controlling muscle activity and gland activity. It has a lot of different functions within it. Specialized cell. But C on your handout is what I want you to look at here. It responds to nerve impulses of other neurons, which is a very important thing. And another term for that is excitable, and I'll talk a lot about that at the end of the day. It is excitable, and it can transmit an impulse from one neuron to another, or from one neuron to a muscle. And that makes it very, very special. Special. I always feel funny when I say the word is special, because I think of that Saturday Night Live skit. I'm special. But it is a special, special cell. Not many can get excitable. This one can. Now, when it does, it's another term for it is conducting. It conducts. And the ways it conducts is to or from the central nervous system. If it's conducting impulses to the central nervous system, would it be afferent or efferent? You sure? I heard both answers, so which one do you really think it is? Afferent or?
Afferent.
It's afferent. Conducting to the central nervous system. That means it's bringing information from the periphery, bringing it in. That's sensory. Sensory always comes in. So that would be A. And then it can conduct from the central nervous system, which would be efferent, taking it to the muscles or the glands to get a response. And then, under number two there, it can conduct within. And that's all the stuff going on in your brain and in your spinal cord. All that thinking, all that memory, all the emotions, it's all in there. So that's all I'm going to say about the neuron. We'll talk more about that fellow later. But neuroglia, the supporting cells, what did they do? Well, the nervous system is complicated. So there's a lot of different jobs that neuroglia have to handle. And because of that, there are actually different types of neuroglia. And interestingly, the neuroglia that are in the central nervous system are completely, well, not completely, but they're different from those in the peripheral nervous system. So we're going to divide it here. We're going to talk about the neuroglia centrally and the neuroglia peripherally. In the central nervous system, you have four types. The astrocyte, anyone from Houston? Okay, got your astros here. The oligodendrocyte, you got to say that one. Oligodendrocyte. Okay, that's one, that's a biggie. We're going to learn a lot about oligodendrocyte. The microglia and the epidermal cells. These are centrally. And then we're going to get into talking about the last two that are in the peripheral nervous system, the Schwann cell and the satellite cell. Okay, so first one, astrocyte. Astro, you think of a star, don't you? I know I do. All right, hopefully you're there too. You're thinking star. Astrocytes are star-shaped. They're little fellas. They twine around the neurons. And in doing so, they use their little star-like extensions to twine around the neurons and also twine around capillaries. And what they do is they support the neurons and they hold the capillaries toward the neuron to help with transfer of nutrients, transfer of oxygen and such. So they're good supportive cells that help with the nutrition of the neuron and attaching the neurons together. Just think of a good support system there, hugging all those neurons. And that's what it looks like, the picture up on the slide. The oligodendrocyte. Now this one is actually smaller than an astrocyte. But kind of similar shaped. It has its central core to it with all these things sticking out of it, kind of like a star. But what the oligodendrocyte does that is so important is as it twines around a neuron, it actually twines. Lots of twines. Sometimes lots of, I'm not even going to give you numbers, lots of twines around it. And in doing so, it insulates the neuron. It produces something called myelin. You may have heard of that before if you've had any sort of anatomy. So this is the producer of this myelin sheath that goes around the neuron in the central nervous system only. Remember, these are just central. And that myelin is an insulator, and we'll hear more about that as we go through the classes. So this gives you a picture of what it looks like. Central part with lots of extensions coming out. Those extensions are what twine around and produce that insulating myelin. The next one of the bunch, the microglia. Microglia are very, very similar to monocytes. And what do monocytes do in the blood? Anyone here ever have mono? You don't have to tell me if you've had mono. I didn't hear what you said. I broke my microphone. Oh, never mind. I'm back. I'm on. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay, I asked what monocytes do, and I'm having trouble hearing because of the fans, so I'll just answer my own question. Monocytes in the blood, they are protective, and you can leave the fan on. You can leave it on. I don't want you guys getting hot. But what they do is they take care of the bacteria and the waste products. They eat it up and clean out the blood system as well as other tissues. So monocytes are good things to have. In the nervous system, you have microglia, and they do the same sort of thing. They're like the trash man. They go around, they look for waste, they find waste, they phagocyte it, which just means they engulf it, and goodbye waste. So they clean up the nervous system, taking away waste and debris. It's the cellular waste. So as the cell consumes things, it produces waste products. That's about as deep as I can get on that one. Cell food. Yeah, cell poop. The last one I have is the epidermal cell. Now, this is the last one in the central nervous system. Now, this one looks different than the others. The others kind of had a star shape and all that. This one has this cell lining shape is what I'll call it, because that's exactly what it does. It lines things. The epidermal cell lines the cavities and the holes, the spaces within the central nervous system. Now, I had a brother who always, kind of always mean to me. We all had that sibling in our family. And he used to always say, I have holes in my brain. Well, I didn't realize he was telling the truth. You know, we do. We have holes in our brain. Now, they're not filled with air. They're filled with fluid. But what's lining these holes in our brain, these spaces, are the epidermal cells. They also line a hole or a space that runs right down the central portion of our spinal cord. And that's your central canal of the spinal cord. So they're there, lining. And we'll talk more about them when we talk about the fluid in our brain. All right, so we had three neuroglial cells in the central nervous system. Can you name all? Did I say three? Oh, how many are there? Four. Keep me straight, folks. Okay, so tell me the four. Astrocytes. Oligodendrocytes. Microglia. Epidermal. Good, 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 good. Get those four down. The last two neuroglia that we're going to talk about are in the peripheral nervous system. Now, you have this picture in your handout. This is the picture of all these wonderful neuroglial cells. But I will not test you on the picture. I'm not going to have you try to find them and identify them by shape. That's not important to me. What's important to me is that you can identify them by function and location. So are they central, peripheral, and what do they do? So the last two, Schwann and satellite. I kind of like the fact that the two that begin with S are in the peripheral, so they kind of, they're like twins, they stay together. Schwann and satellite. The Schwann cell, that one I like to say a lot. Those people in this class before know that. The Schwann cell is the one that produces myelin in the peripheral nervous system. What was the one that produced myelin in the central nervous system? The oligodendrocyte, good. So this one's in the peripheral nervous system. The Schwann cell and the oligodendrocyte have the same function. They're just located in different areas of the body, but they have the same function. And the last one, the satellite cell, there's really not much I can say about this. And in fact, I couldn't even find a good picture, which is kind of sad. It makes you feel like the satellite cell is the forgotten beast of the whole nervous system. But the satellite cell is very similar to the astrocyte. What was the function of the astrocyte? Yeah, support, all those blood vessels close to the neurons so they get their nutrition. Same job of the satellite cell. So what we don't have in the peripheral nervous system, we don't have the trash collector, the microglia type. But that's okay, because monocytes can do that in the peripheral nervous system. They come out of the blood, and they can take care of it. So that's all right. We don't need the microglia in the peripheral. And what's the other one we don't have in the peripheral nervous system? An epidermal type cell. And that's fine too, because we don't have any holes in the peripheral nervous system. We don't have anything to line. So those two types of functioning cells aren't needed peripherally. Just the satellite and the Schwann. You guys made it through the first hour.